decisions the government will take in order to increase and promote local production to stimulate the economy.
That has been involved in what they described as a war on Islam.
The banning of products from Sweden, Israel, the United States and the UK is an obligation on all Muslims worldwide. This is because of the hate and aggression these nations have toward Muslims and Islam. These are people who do not respect the religion of Allah. The banning of products from these nations is a positive step forward to teach them a lesson so that we can depend on ourselves and increase local production and industry.
The Ansar Allah-backed Yemeni government said it is funding plans and initiatives to revive Yemeni production. This is necessary in order to provide food security for millions of Yemenis who have suffered tremendously from food shortages caused by the 8 year of Saudi-imposed blockade on Yemen.
The fact is, although boycotting goods from nations that support insulting Islam has some impact, it is simply not enough. This is why the Sana'a government is calling for a united Islamic front to cut off all ties with Sweden and any nation involved in sacrilegious acts against Islam. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
This is the short part of Imam Khomeini's speech. You priests and clergy, followers of Christ, rise up and give your support to the oppressed of the world against oppressors, and for the sake of Allah and the teachings of Jesus Christ, ring the bells of your churches just once in support of the oppressed of Iran and in condemnation of the oppressors. May blessed be for those who are hungry and thirsty for justice and strive after it. Vow to those who strive against the teachings of Jesus Christ and all the prophets for the sake of spies and oppressors of the rights of nations.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Hajj. In one of his speeches, he said that when touching the Hajar al-Aswad, the black stone, make a covenant with God to be inimical to his and his messenger's enemies, as well as the enemies of the pious and noble people, and never to be obedient servants to them. No matter who they are or where they live, let your covenant with God also call for the eradication of fear and submissiveness from your hearts. For the enemies of God, at the head of which is great Satan, which is the US regime, all are mean and miserable, although they possess superior tools for slaughtering, suppressing the nations and other crimes. Now, in this part of his speech, obviously, he's talking about the evil powers of his time on which the US regime is at the top. Even now, we can see the Zionist regime and the US regime killing innocent people, the children in the Palestine. And obviously, they are backing some other governments who are also killing the innocent people, for example, as we can see in Yemen, in other parts of the world, for example, the ISIS or Daesh that came to the Syria and Iraq. So all these things are done by the great Satan, which Imam Khomeini has said, the Zionist regime as well. So all these are backed by the Taghut, by the evil powers.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala, oh.
صلى الله عليه يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله.
Imam says that never submit to them, never be obedient to them, never be the obedient servant. And maybe this is for the governments who are trying to have good relation with such satanic powers, who wants to expand their relationship with these evils. So Imam says that do not be servant of such people, be the servant of God, have the fear of God, bring justice into the society. This world should be filled with the justice and not the oppression and terrorism. So the oppression, the arrogance is being brought by these systems, by these evil powers. We can see in the economy, we can see in other parts of the world how they are being arrogant, how they are suppressing the nations, how they are taking the rights of the nation, how in the UN, when all the countries are saying one thing, they use their veto power and they do not let nations to take decisions. So all these things shows us that we should not be submissive to the arrogant powers.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. Familiar with a geological phenomenon, which I guess you like it. Actually, fans of geotourism are mostly attracted to this natural phenomenon. It's purple in color and looks like a heart from above. Can you believe it? It's a mud volcano in Iran. It's called Gomishan or Naftlije mud volcano. This unique attractive phenomenon is located in Bandar Turkaman. Ladies and gentlemen, please accompany me in this exciting trip.
Thank you.
Naft Lije Mud Volcano is located in the eastern shores of the Caspian Sea in Gomishan County, Golestan Province, northern Iran. This mud volcano is about 8 meters high and 500 meters in diameter and has a small purple or pink lake on top of it. The reason for the unique color of this lake is the valuable mineral iodine in its surroundings. This small lake is also filled with salt water as well as clay mud and gas. Naft Lije Mud Volcano has healing properties and its mud is a cure for diseases such as joint and spine pains, joint stiffness, neurological diseases, early stages of vascular stenosis and muscle spasms. Ishan village and I'm driving along graveled road and I'll get there in a few minutes. By the way, a mud volcano or a mud dome is a landform created by the eruption of mud or slurries, water and gases. Several geological processes may cause the formation of mud volcanoes. The mud produced by mud volcanoes is mostly formed as hot water, which has been heated deep below the Earth's surface, begins to mix and blend with mineral deposits, thus creating the mud slurry exudate. So here's our destination. It's incredible! A big purple lake. It's stunning. More beautiful than what I saw in pictures. Did you know that half of the world's mud volcanoes exist in Iran? These mud volcanoes are mostly located in north of Iran, in Golestan province, and in southern Iran, in Sistan and Baluchistan, as well as in Hormuzgan. Let me get closer to it. Honestly, I am mesmerized by this place. It smells like crude oil, but actually, it is the underground gas. This lake, just like a spa, has medicinal advantages. Now I go down this steep to reach the lake's rim. It's unbelievable. I mean, the existence of such a place. Oh, you can't believe that a huge amount of mud is being released from the center of the lake. Oh, look. It's wonderful. They say it didn't used to be purple. And the change in the balance of minerals, specifically iodine, caused its color to change into purple, or some say into pink. Look at the mud. It's a sticky. Much different with clay. They say this mud is better for pottery than clay. Actually, it doesn't need a long process for being prepared, and it doesn't crack. Oh, look, over there, tourists are taking photos. And some of them are inside the lake in order to enjoy the medicinal effects of this lake. It said bathing in this mud relieves the joint and spine pains and is a cure for neurological diseases. So I take some mud for my grandma's knees. Iran is actually the land of wonders and beauties.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a 2024 military spending following heated debates between Republicans and the Democrats in the lower chamber of Congress. The bill, also known as Fiscal 2024 National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, sets policy for the Pentagon and authorizes record $886 billion in spending. The motion was approved 2019-2010, not from the typical bipartisan support for the bill, but through party lines. The measure includes a pay raise for members of the military, initiatives to counter China, and an additional $300 million to support Ukraine. The Republicans also added a number of amendments to the bill. But the Democrats said they would not support the NDAA after the Republican majority House voted for the amendments on hot-button social issues pushed by the party's hard-right flank. That includes an amendment that would reverse the Defense Department policy of reimbursing expenses for service members who travel to obtain an abortion.
Now, I have voted for the NDAA every year that I have served in Congress, but I cannot in good conscience vote for this legislation in its current form.
The Pentagon travel reimbursement policy is aimed at helping those in the military or family members who are seeking an abortion but stationed in states that have outlawed it. Representative Adam Smith, the senior Democrat on the House Services Committee, warned that Americans are going to have fewer qualified people willing to join the military because of what was passed. Republicans, however, hailed the passage of the bill and the amendments. Republican Representative Barry Loudermilk said House Republicans today passed an NDAA that increases our military's lethality and decreases the wokeness that has been infused in its ranks in recent years. The House Republicans were able to pass their amendments without Democratic support, but such provision would die in the Senate, where President Biden's fellow Democrats hold a 59-49 majority. The debate in that chamber is set to begin on Tuesday. The passage of the NDAA comes as the Senate is expected to pass its version of the act later this month, after which two chambers will negotiate a compromise that would come up for a vote later this year. The NDAA, one of the only major pieces of legislation Congress passes annually, is closely watched by a broad swath of industry and other interests because it determines everything from purchases of ships and aircrafts to pay increases for soldiers and how to address geopolitical threats. The record military spending comes as, according to figures, the U.S. spends more on defense than the next 10 countries combined. while China, Russia, India, Saudi Arabia, United Kingdom, Germany, France, South Korea, Japan, and Ukraine spend more than $800 billion altogether, the U.S. alone spends $886. In the meantime, the U.S. has historically devoted a large share of its economy to defense than many of its allies. From 1977 to 2022, the U.S. defense spending out of the country's GDP fluctuated between 3-7% compared to that of UK, France, Italy, Germany, Canada, and Japan. The passage of the bill by the House comes as the United States has much vital issues to address, at least domestically. According to figures released by Peter G. Peterson Foundation, the United States is lagging way behind other wealthy nations in terms of health care. Figures by the foundation say U.S. per capita healthcare spending is over twice the average of other wealthy nations, including Italy, Japan, the U.K., Ireland, and Canada. At the same time, and according to figures by the same foundation, the U.S. national debt stood at over $31 trillion at the end of 2022. Of that amount, about $24 trillion, or 78%, was debt held by the public, representing cash borrowed from domestic and foreign investors. The federal government's borrowed that money, but the one who has to pay it back is the American public. Still, regardless of those facts, the United States continues to arm countries already at war with other nations, including Ukraine. Washington has left no stone unturned to provide military aid packages to Kiev worth tens of billions of dollars and continues to do so. Taiwan is also another destination for U.S. weapons worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The U.S. also moves on with its military build-ups in the South China Sea and on the Korean Peninsula, which have literally brought nothing for the Americans but fear of an all-out escalation. All in all, what seems to be of high significance for U.S. authorities is to come to the understanding that they need to stop spending the U.S. taxpayers' money for deadly wars and instead address issues Americans are grappling with, including health care.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi has concluded a tour of Africa. During his trip, President Raisi visited Kenya, Uganda, and Zimbabwe. In the Kenyan capital of Nairobi, President Raisi oversaw, along with his Kenyan counterpart, William Ruto, the signing of 5 memoranda of understanding. Raisi said that Iran is ready to cooperate with Kenya in the fields of petrochemicals, agriculture, science, technology, medicines, and medical equipment, as well as the fishery industry and the fight against narcotics. The Iranian chief executive also described his trip as a turning point in bilateral relations, noting that it can create a good market for Iranian products in Kenya and in East Africa. He further emphasized that the ties between Iran and Kenya would not be limited to their borders.
We have historic cooperation with the African continent and Kenya, and believe that relations between the governments and people of Iran and Kenya can expand further. Our goal is to expand cooperation by tenfold.
It is a special privilege to host President Raisi in Nairobi, and his presence is testimony to the strong ties between Kenya and Iran. It is also a demonstration of our shared commitment to cooperate for the benefit of the people of our two countries.
In Uganda, President Raisi called for expanding and strengthening relations with Uganda in various fields. Raisi, accompanied by a high-ranking delegation, was officially received by the Ugandan President Museveni at his presidential palace in Kampala. President Raisi called for the development of closer economic ties between the nations and noted that friendly countries need to work together to develop raw materials into value-added products. Two sides also inked 4 cooperation documents. President Raisi visited Zimbabwe in the last leg of his African tour. Raisi said Iran and Zimbabwe have great capacities that can be used in the promotion and development of relations and cooperation between the two countries. The two countries signed a number of MOUs to boost trade. In March, Raisi hosted a meeting with a group of representatives from West Africa, in which he pitched Iran as a different kind of partner when compared with countries in the West with colonial histories in the continent. The trip comes a month after Raisi embarked on a tour of Latin America, where he signed a host of agreements to boost ties with fellow U.S. sanctioned allies Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua.
Iran's view on Africa is quite different from that of neocolonialism or its older version. We seek to transfer technology to Africa and empower the continent. African leaders and their people are now quite sensitive on protecting their independence. This is among commonalities between Iran and African nations. Another issue of equal importance for Iran and Africa is the U.S. sanctions regime. With Africa's assistance, we should prevent the U.S. and certain states that still have a colonial mindset from utilizing the deadly tool of sanctions against nations.
President Raisi's trip to Africa is the first such visit to the continent in 11 years. His visit is primarily aimed at boosting Iran's foreign trade in a region with an economy of $600 billion. Iran exported $1.2 billion worth of goods and services, including petrochemical products, food, medicine, and engineering and technical services to Africa last year. The amount was still not high enough, despite it being an improvement on recent years. Iran, after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, embarked on renewing relations with the African people based on Islam's prohibition of racism. The policy of strengthening relations with Africa continued during the terms of the next Iranian president, who paid 41 visits to Africa in total. Trade between Iran and Africa increased between 2005 and 2006, but the global financial crisis and cruel sanctions imposed on the Islamic Republic under UN Security Council resolution in 2007 decimated it. Iran expects trade with Africa to hit $10 billion in the next 3 years. Africa is home to 18% of the world's population. With an increasing population growth, it sits on some 30% of the world's mineral reserves, 65% of the world's arable land, and 10% of the planet's freshwater source. It is rich in natural resources, with abundant arable land, water, oil, natural gas, minerals, forests, and wildlife. Experts believe the global economy requires Iran to interact with any opportunities on an international scale and to improve its foreign currency incomes.
North Korea has accused the U.S. military of conducting provocative surveillance flights which violate its airspace and trespass in its exclusive economic zone. Pyongyang warned Washington that if such provocations persist, American reconnaissance planes may be shot down. This comes amid soaring tensions on the Korean Peninsula, largely as a result of massive joint U.S.-South Korean war games, which have seen the White House deploy aircraft carriers, nuclear-capable bombers, and Reaper drones. Kim Yo-jong, the sister of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, as well as one of his top foreign policy officials, said North Korean warplanes scrambled to intercept a U.S. spy plane flying in Pyongyang's exclusive economic zone, where it controls natural resources. This includes the area within 200 nautical miles of its territory. She insisted there were 8 such intrusions on Monday, denouncing the intensifying stories by the American aircraft as encroaching on her country's sovereignty. Kim issued a warning that U.S. forces would experience a very critical fight if these aggressive actions continue. South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff denied Washington was flying spy planes into North Korean territory, with a spokesman explaining the U.S. is instead in the area surrounding the peninsula conducting standard reconnaissance activities. In response, Kim fired back that the Joint Chiefs of Staff was acting as if they were the Pentagon's spokesperson. An earlier statement by North Korea's defense ministry stated that the U.S. was flying its reconnaissance planes within the country's inviolable airspace, which extends 12 nautical miles from the coast per international law. The ministry also charged the U.S. actions were raising the risk of nuclear conflict on the peninsula, pointing to the White House's pledge that the Washington will periodically dock nuclear-armed ballistic missile submarines in South Korea, while also citing the ongoing presence of American spy planes and drones. The statement alerted, "There is no guarantee that such a shocking accident as the downing of the U.S. Air Force strategic reconnaissance plane will not happen." North Korean media described the U.S. sending nuclear assets to the peninsula as the most undisguised nuclear blackmail against Pyongyang as well as its neighbors. Last month, an American B-52 strategic bomber participated in joint air military drills with Seoul. After a multi-year pause, U.S. President Joe Biden's administration resumed large-scale war games targeting the North Korea. Consequently, since 2022, Pyongyang has launched more than 100 missiles. A as part of the giant joint military exercises this year, Washington and Seoul more recently carried out the largest war drills in the history of their seven-decade alliance. Some of these drills have even taken place near the border with the demilitarized zone. The North has maintained that its weapons and nuclear programs are essential deterrent measures in the face of persisting war games carried out near its waters by US and South Korean military forces, which it regards as rehearsals to invade the country. Meanwhile, in a separate report released by North Korea's Foreign Ministry, Pyongyang accused Washington of making desperate efforts to ignite a nuclear war and blamed the US for sending strategic assets to the region. The so-called denuclearization talks that got underway after a high-profile summit between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and former U.S. President Donald Trump has stalled since 2019 over persisting U.S.-led sanctions against the North and Washington's refusal to reciprocate Pyongyang's denuclearization bid. The Biden administration has recently deployed a nuclear-armed warship to South Korea, further inciting the North to continue and expand its nuclear weapons program. Last year, the U.S., Japan, and South Korea entered a trilateral defense agreement. At the time, North Korea referred to this pact as an Asian version of NATO. In June, it was revealed that the U.S. intelligence community has concluded Pyongyang will continue to use its nuclear weapons status only as a way of coercively accomplishing some political and diplomatic objectives, not for offensive military purposes. Compared with Donald Trump, President Joe Biden has taken a vastly more bellicose policy regarding North Korea. In the last half of the Trump administration, war games were rolled back, dialogue was opened, and all sides reduced weapons tests. As crippling sanctions are imposed indefinitely, Biden has offered Pyongyang no off-ramp. The administration is demanding Kim agree to his country's denuclearization and disarmament. The current status quo has North Korea facing myriad regime change rehearsals on its doorstep, while U.S. officials periodically threaten the country with obliteration.
Crossing a new threshold in the type of weaponry supplied to Kiev, the United States on Friday announced it will provide the internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine.
In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
Sullivan said Ukraine would not be using the munitions in a foreign land. He added that Kiev has provided assurances in writing that the weapons will be used carefully to minimize risks to civilian lives. U.S. President Joe Biden defended the decision, saying it was because the efforts to defend against Russia had run out of ammunition. The move drew an instant reaction from the United Nations.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago, and he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
A number of key U.S. allies defied Washington's decision to supply cluster munitions to Kiev.
Well, the UK is signatory to a convention which prohibits the production or use of cluster munitions and discourages their use. We will continue to do our part to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion.
Sunak made the comments in an address to reporters. Spain also followed suit, saying that certain weapons and bombs cannot be delivered under any circumstances. France reiterated its opposition to the use of the controversial weapon. Germany said the decision goes against the Convention of Cluster Munitions that bans such weapons on the battlefield. Neither the United States nor Ukraine is party to the pact. Russia strongly condemned the move. In a statement, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said it is an act of desperation and shows weakness against the backdrop of the failure of the much-touted Ukrainian counteroffensive. Zakharova added the decision showed the aggressive anti-Russian course taken by the U.S., which is aimed at prolonging the conflict in Ukraine as much as possible. Tehran also lambasted the move, Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the U.S. decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine shows Washington's determination to perpetuate and further complicate the war in Ukraine. Inside the U.S., congressional Democrats raised concerns over the move. Senators Barbara Lee and Tim Kaine said Washington's decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine could inspire other countries to sidestep an international convention barring such munitions. Supplying Kyiv with cluster munitions comes as the armaments are highly controversial weapons that typically release large number of smaller bomblets, which can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Those that go undetonated potentially endanger civilians for years to come. Cluster munitions are banned by over 100 countries. The supply of such weapons bring Washington's total aid to Ukraine to more than $40 billion since the Ukraine war began in February 2022. In total, the United States and its allies have provided Ukraine with numerous military aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars. The military support for Ukraine includes the delivery of heavy and light military weapons and ammunition, as well as non-lethal material military aid. Those weapons are sent to Kyiv regardless of the fact that Russia has time and again warned that such a trend would only prolong the conflict and cause more destruction on both sides. But Ukraine allies seem to be more concerned about Kyiv's failure on the battlefield and have consequently kept pumping Kyiv full of advanced weapons. Those weapons not only have failed to prevent the conflict from getting exacerbated, but instead they have led to even more escalation on both sides. With Ukraine's so-called counter-offensive now its in second months, Kyiv has announced gains during its attacks on Russian forces. Ukraine says a number of villages have been liberated thanks to its counter-offensive. Russia, in the meantime, has targeted positions belonging to Ukraine using missiles, causing death and destruction in several areas. All in all, by supplying Ukraine with the internationally banned cluster munitions, the United States is taking two huge risks. One is simply prolonging the war, as Russia has numerously reiterated. And two is possibly getting Washington involved in the conflict. And that's what many throughout the globe prefer not to pick, given its potential global catastrophic consequences.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to have patience with our children. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear friends, it is an honor to be here at your service. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about how one should remain patient when it comes to our children. So, raising children, as we all know, is truly an ordeal. It is not easy at all. And when we find the different phases and the stages that our children go through that part of their life that they are with us, whether it is an infant who cries quite a bit, or it is a young child who tends to break everything, or it is a teenager who seems to break all the rules, or slowly after they move on to their teenage years, then this kind of semi-independence in which they want to start to live their own life. Throughout all of these different phases, we find that one has to be patient. And perhaps we will talk about the various different phases of children and how one needs to be patient in that specific phase and what it is that one can do. But we will suffice here that throughout all these stages, we have to trust and rely on the Almighty Allah, and we have to be patient with the children. At an age where we can explain things to them, we should explain things to them. But at an age where clearly we know they won't be able to understand what is going on, such as the early years of childhood, then, well, we have to be patient and kind of go along with what is going on. Now, how exactly do we remain patient when we seem like we are, you know, at the brink of exploding and at the brink of just losing our total control over the situation, well, you kind of have to step outside of the box, if you will, for a short time, and even if it's sometimes for, you know, a few minutes. We're going to have to kind of put ourselves out of the situation, give a little bit of time to calm down and relax, you know, and kind of get back into control. Of course, individuals, they do become frustrated when it comes to children, and it's natural because most people, when they have children, they are a little bit older. And it's interesting that this is why it has been encouraged to get married at a young age, so that there isn't this huge age gap between you and your children. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about how to be patient when it comes to our children. This, of course, is a very important topic, and there are many books that have been written about this. And it's good to kind of read up on it. There's nothing wrong with that. But many a times, I think that the answer is relatively simple. We just have a tendency to not implement that answer, whether it's something such as, you know, giving yourself, you know, a 4 or 5 minute timeout, let yourself cool down, come out of the situation, and really, you know, try to understand that the child, you know, depending on what age they're in, that perhaps it's natural for them to be acting the way that they are. And so, you know, one of the ways in order for us to be patient, of course, is to step out of the box, as we said, and give us a little bit of time to breathe and, you know, come back into our senses, if you will. Another one of the things is when we are about to get angry, of course, is to kind of realize that the Almighty Allah is our witness, and the Almighty Allah is seeing everything that is going on. And so when we realize that the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is looking at us, He's witnessing us, then that brings us a sense of comfort, as well as this sense of, okay, you know, we have to be a little bit careful here to not transgress the bounds of the Almighty Allah. And so in these various different manners, and as we said, there's a lot of other techniques out there that you can read up on in order to be patient, because being patient with our children, dear friends, is an integral part to our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Thank you. On June 20th, 2023, Albanian police raided a camp belonging to the anti-Iran terrorist Mujahideen Khalq organization, the MKO, on charges of terror and cyber attacks against foreign institutions. Shortly after, Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani tweeted, "Due to their terrorist nature, the MKO will always be a danger to the security of its host country," adding, "This is why the Iraqi government expelled them and other governments refused to accept them. We hope the Albanian government makes up for its mistake in hosting this terrorist cult." The fact is, as a bloodthirsty group, the MKO is no stranger to terrorist attacks on foreign soil, and its dark track record in Iraq is just a case in point. Before moving to Albania in the mid-2010s, the MKO had lived in Camp Ashraf in northeast Baghdad, Iraq, for more than two decades under the aegis of the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. And before that, the organization had carried out numerous terrorist attacks against Iranian officials and civilians, drawing some 17,000 people to the jaws of death. In fact, the MKO's long list of crimes against their own compatriots made the group a trustworthy partner to Saddam Hussein, who was in an all-out war with Iran. In June 1987, that's less than a year after the MKO established its base in Ashraf, its leader, Masoud Rajavi, announced the establishment of its army at the service of his Iraqi godfather. As native Farsi speakers, members of the MKO army could easily infiltrate Iran's military forces, gathering intelligence on the front line for the Iraqi regime. The army also carried out tens of military operations against Iran. But the MKO mission didn't come to an end after Iran accepted UN Security Council Resolution 598, which called for an immediate ceasefire. In fact, Saddam Hussein evinced even more interest in the group that had shown no mercy to its compatriots. It could serve as his private army in troubled times. The Iraqi dictator then equipped the MKO with an array of modern tanks, personnel carriers, and even helicopters, and trained its members under the supervision of Iraqi seasoned commanders. Up until the year 1988, Iranian civilians were almost the MKO's sole victims. But gradually, Iraqi citizens, including Iraqi Shias and Kurds, also fell victim to the organization's heinous crimes. On August 2, 1990, Saddam Hussein invaded neighboring Kuwait, seeking to compensate for heavy losses he had incurred in his eight-year-old war on Iran. But the Iraqi dictator had made some miscalculations. All his erstwhile Western and Arab supporters stood up against him. So he experienced a second humiliating defeat within a period of a decade, this time in a war called the First Persian Gulf War. The perception that Saddam Hussein had become vulnerable to regime change triggered widespread uprisings against him that lasted from March to April 1991. Initial protests turned into widespread uprisings in which both Shia and Sunni Muslims stood side by side against the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. Just a few days after the start of the uprising in the south, which is also referred to as the Shabaniya Intifada, due to its concurrence with the month of Shaban, another wave of insurgency broke out in the Kurdish-populated areas in the north. Against such a backdrop, the army and intelligence services proved ineffectual in the face of nationwide uprisings, and the dictator was in danger of collapse. But one thing changed the course of history to the detriment of the Iraqi people, the MKO army. The fall of Saddam Hussein meant the fall of Rajavi and his cult. So he deployed his task forces to Basra to infiltrate the protesters in order to identify the leaders of the uprisings. Because there were Iranian nationals, no one suspected them to be the regime's agents. The MKO members accomplished their mission, and within a short period of time, the leaders of the uprisings were all arrested and sentenced to death. Many more went missing for years. Their tragic fate came to light after the fall of Saddam Hussein and the discovery of mass graves. The MKO also helped the Ba'ath regime suppress Iraqi Kurds. Following Saddam Hussein's defeat in the First Persian Gulf War, Kurdish fighters took over Kurdish-populated cities in the north. In addition, they brought under control some areas in western Iraq. While the regime's ragtag army was busy with the uprisings in the south, the time was ripe for the Kurdish fighters in the north to go to Baghdad and topple Saddam Hussein. But here again, the MKO came to save the Iraqi dictator through blocking the Kurds' way to the capital until the arrival of the Iraqi reinforcements. According to the New York Times, Maryam, Masoud Rajavi's wife, told her fighters, "Take the Kurds under your tanks and save your bullets for the Iranian Revolutionary Guards," meaning the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. With the MKO's vital support, Saddam Hussein remained in power for more than 12 years, and with the group's help, thousands of Iraqi Kurds were killed in a bloodbath that later came to be known as the Anfal Genocide.
There are over 1,500 people buried here. They are mostly women and children. There are just five men. All others are women and children. They are Kurds from Kurdistan. We believe they are victims of Anfal campaigns in 1988, that Saddam Hussein's regime committed genocide crime against the people of Kurdistan.
The mass killing of the Kurds in the north resulted in the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Kurdish families. Many Kurdish women and children lost their lives to the cold and hunger, while many went missing. After the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003, Iraqi prisons were the only hope for the families to find their missing loved ones. But as was with the case of Iraqi Shias, mass graves found in prison yards dashed their hopes forever. In 2003, the Iraqi people saw the long-awaited day when the senile dictator was finally arrested, put on trial, and sentenced to death. But as the main accomplice to Saddam Hussein's inhumane crimes, the MKO has so far avoided trial. Ironically, in recent years, the group has made democracy and human rights its new mantra, a desperate attempt to hide its ugly past. The raid by Albanian police came a few days after France banned an upcoming MKO rally in Paris. Has the West come to its senses? And will it stop harboring the terrorist group on its soil? History shows that the MKO is not like a gentle, caring guest, but a cannibal who can feast voraciously upon the flesh of the host with no remorse.
IRIB English Radio.